Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Steve Worshing, CFP. He's the president of the client-driven practice and author of Stop Asking for Referrals. I met Steve with Kirk Lowe a couple of years ago at the SEI Top Producers Conference, where he was a featured keynote speaker talking about Stop Asking for Referrals. Highly sought after for interviews, everybody. You're going to hear this name, Steve Worshing, is going to be around much, much, much more. In fact, if you want to really get into his mind, he does an amazing podcast called Becoming Referrable with Julie Littlechild, who is a personal hero of mine. So, hey, Steve, welcome to the show, man.
Well, thanks, Matt. I don't know how I'm ever going to live up to that intro. So thank you. But thank you very much. It's great to be here with you. It's a lot of fun to talk with you.
Always. Yeah. And man, we had such a good time on the podcast. You are a great podcaster. And please, everybody, we'll make sure that that's in the show notes to click to follow and start paying attention to there and listening to their podcast, too. But today we're going to talk about striking it niche. Now, niche marketing is something that Kirk and I really, really believe in. And we're so happy that we have other thought leaders like yourself who are firm believers in the power of niche marketing too. So let's just start at the beginning. First off, where did this epiphany come from that this is such an important aspect of a practice?
Well, and let me say, it's just I really appreciate the fact that we can get together at our Nicheaholics Anonymous meetings. Well, it came out of when I started doing research about why people weren't referring more often. You know, it doesn't take very long to get around to the recognition that one of the challenges is that when advisors talk about themselves, everybody sounds alike. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and the differences can be really nuanced. And so if you talk to somebody in the business, they might get it. Mm-hmm. But if you talk to a member of the public that you want as a client, they won't get it. They don't understand. So everybody sounds the same. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard. It's you know, advisors need to be able to answer what I call the ultimate question. And the ultimate question is, I need an advisor. I've got all this stuff I need some help with. Why should I choose you right over all these other people I have access to? Mm-hmm. And the answer to that is niche.
Right.
Now, I should also clarify, because I use it in a very specific way. And for me, there is a difference between target market and niche.
Ooh, so let's break that down. Yeah.
So for a lot of people, they say niche market and they talk about it. But to me, there's a difference. So Target market is the group of people you're trying to attract. And they have particular characteristics and they have particular needs, wants, and desires. Okay. And niche is the unique experience you create in the hopes of attracting some of those folks.
Ooh.
So you can niche, and I draw the distinction because you know, people get worried that they're going to, you know, we talk about having a unique niche, a narrow niche, mm-hmm. and people mix that up with target market, and they think that they're going to market themselves out of existence because right. it gets too narrow. Mm-hmm. Well, you can have a very broad target market, but have a very unique niche within that. So if you go into it saying, yeah, well, you know, pre-retirees is a humongous portion of the population, but I have this special definition, and I'm creating an experience that I hope to attract 10% of those people.
Okay.
So that's how you can set yourself apart. Well, you know, I've these five advisors all say that they work with pre-retirees. Oh, yeah, but let me tell you how I'm different than them. And so you can have a unique niche. The best way I've learned to describe it is this way. So if Matt, if I were going to ask you to give me the name of a retailer that does well with mass affluent women who are looking for fashion and shoes, what would you say?
Chico's.
Yeah, Chico's is a good example. Mm-hmm. Nordstrom is one comes up constantly, right? And so Nordstrom does really well with that group. You know who else does well with that group?
Target.
Amazon Prime.
Oh, Amazon
yeah, right,
Prime.
Target. Not exactly. It's a different target, but Amazon Prime. The demographic of the Amazon Prime subscriber is really very similar to Nordstrom's target market, market definition, mm-hmm. and they sell, you know, especially with their acquisition of Zappos, mm-hmm. they sell lots of fashion and lots of mm-hmm. shoes. You know who else does well with that target market? Stitch Fix. So if you're not familiar with Stitch Fix, have you heard of Trunk Club for Men?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Same idea. Same idea. You call them, you tell them a little bit about your tastes, and you talk with a designer, and then they just ship you a box of stuff, and you go through it, and you like this, and you don't like that. You ship back whatever you don't like. You pay for the stuff you keep. And then over time, they learn, and with the idea that you'd keep more and more and more of the box. Okay? Mm-hmm. Same target market.
Hmm.
Three radically different niches, right? So Nordstrom is, I want to go in. I want to hold it up next to me. I want to see how I look in it. Okay. I want to see what else they've got on the rack.
Sure.
Amazon is, I want to do my shopping at 10 o'clock at night with mm-hmm. a glass of wine in my hand and mm-hmm. in my yoga pants. And mm-hmm. I want to know what other people think about this stuff.
Mm.
And Stitch Fix is, I don't even care. Just send it to me. I'll tell you if I like it. So three very unique experiences, same target market. So when I use niche, wow. I'm talking about that experience.
Okay. So talk to me about the experience. That's a fascinating, different sort of perspective. And that's, see, this is why we do this, right? I want our listeners to have any opportunity to learn whatever they possibly can, especially from points of view that aren't fundamentally different than us, but you're taking a very different tact on it. So I love that. How do you then help your clients uncover or create that experience?
Well, first, it needs to start with the client. And so, you know, that's why we call it the client-driven practice. And mm-hmm. and you know, some of the stuff that I've learned from Julie in terms of client surveys and some of the stuff that I do in the client advisory boards, you mm-hmm. know, you find out from your clients what they find most valuable about what you do. You find out what they appreciate that's different about you, and you build on that, and you start experimenting with, you know, with different things that you can do within your business that will set you apart. You know, learn how to go and learn how to color outside the lines.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to go out of the traditional kit of services that most advisors do and see what turns your clients on.
Now, hold on. I got to pause you there because
sure. yeah.
you and I are kindred spirits with how powerful we believe advisory boards are. But how do you get over the fear? Some advisors are utterly terrified to ask the questions that I know you ask during an advisory board.
Yeah. All I can say, it's like getting into a swimming pool. I mean, you know, if you're afraid of how cold it is and you just stick your toe in it a little bit and, you know, it's going to reinforce your fear, you know, just jump right in. if for things like advisory boards and personal interviews with clients mm-hmm. and surveys, they like you.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to kick you out,
right?
I mean, they want you to succeed. In most clients' minds, they equate your success with their success.
Absolutely.
So they want you to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not, you know, if you ask them a question about, we're thinking about this new service, what do you think? Even if they don't like it, they'll say, no, I don't think so. They're mm-hmm. not going to say, get out of here. I'm firing you. I'm going to, you know, somebody. That's just, you know, like most fears, they're a little on the irrational side.
Sure.
So, you know, just so ask, you know, if okay. you don't have to do it. That's one of the things. Well, we'll talk more about advisory boards later, but, you know, it's, you can ask and then you don't have to do anything because you asked.
Right.
You know, all yeah. you're doing is getting information.
You know, when I had my own coaching practice, everybody that I did an advisory board for, after it was done and we would write up a report, my team would write up a report, and they would say that was the single best piece of consulting they ever had, with more actionable items. And every time, God, Steve, you're so right. They doted over the advisor. Oh my God, we love him. Because why would they give up, I don't know how long yours are, 3 hours of their time
right.
if they
exactly.
didn't really like you and want you to be successful?
Yeah, and you have all their money. they like you.
Yeah,
they trust
true.
You,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But let me tell you a little bit about, you know, where I want to go with this,
okay.
right? Why niche is important. And you know, we have so many more resources now. We have so much more connectivity. We have so many more tools and those mm-hmm. kinds of things. We can do things advisors could never do before.
Mm-hmm.
And by the same token, we have competition we've never had before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's critically important for advisors to think about how they're different and how they're unique. But the benefit of it, the real, you know, where this can take us, where I would like to see this industry go, is that by getting to know a particular group of people that may have the same basic demographics, they may be pre-retirees or physicians or women or whatever it is, but your people, your particular group, You get to know their needs, wants, and desires well enough. You start relating to them and communicating to them on a whole new level. And not only is that good for acquiring clients, but you give better advice and you create better outcomes. And so we make the world better. If you stop looking at everybody who comes through the door, if the line that's going into your office has a, you know, every person looks different than the last one, you'll never get there.
Sure.
But if there is some commonality between them, let me give you an example.
Okay.
My wife is a classical bass player.
Hmm.
And she, like most orchestral musicians, she has a home studio.
Mm-hmm.
And she found a few years ago and that she really relates well to girls who, you know, middle school girls who are starting to learn the bass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the bass is a male-dominated instrument.
Sure.
Women are not taken seriously in the bass community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real struggle. And so she's fought really hard to get recognition, to bring women into it. And she was one of the first women to serve on the International Society of Bassists board.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so she's really been pushing that. But one of the things that she finds is that teenage girls learn a little differently. Now, there's nothing different about the technical aspects of it. First position is still first position, and
sure.
Third position is still third position.
Mm-hmm.
But she's one of the few bass teachers who can honestly say, I, too, was once a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And so her students do better. And mm-hmm. it's not something you can point to that you would learn in the technical aspects
sure.
of learning bass, but it's just, it may be in how she relates to them
yep.
and what kinds of exercises she can take them through and how she talks with them. And so she can connect with those students better
mm-hmm.
and they do better. And I think that we as advisors can do the same thing. If we learn to get together with our people and find out who our people are and find out how to relate to them on a unique basis.
I love that. I love that. So after you figure that out, what does make you unique and different from a client experience standpoint, then what do you do?
Well, to set yourself apart, you need to create that experience that's different. And I don't mean different like better. Better will only take you so far.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can do something that is honestly different, and when I'm running around the country doing my striking at niche talk, you know, we have six kinds of niche that you can put together, and we go through examples of each one, and they are the technical, educational, psychosocial, affinity, values, and experience niches.
Ooh.
And so there are all kinds of different ways of looking at it and putting it together. One of the things that I think it's really important for advisors to have is a simple graphic way of describing their process. And that in and of itself can
mm-hmm.
can differentiate. And I don't mean our proprietary process that, you know, is unique among advisors, and it's a discovery meeting and a plan presentation and implement, you know, it's guys.
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
One of my clients once said to me, you know, if your unique process is the 6-step CFP process, it's not that unique.
Yeah.
So rather than doing it chronologically, rather than doing it, you know, logistically, the, mm-hmm. the steps you go through, take it through and talk about the individual things that the client accomplishes.
Hmm.
Something that they would look at and say, oh, yeah, I'd like to do that, or
right.
that would be helpful. Or, you know, so the first step may be, instead of a discovery meeting, the first step may be get organized.
Mm.
And the second one might be get control of your cash flow. And the third one might be map out your goals.
Mm-hmm.
So by doing that, you know, and then take a look at it, and then go to six of your closest competitors' websites and see what they're saying about what they do.
Sure.
And I don't mean, and I'll ask advisors this sometimes, and they'll say, oh, well, you know, the broker down the street or the life insurance agent. No. Go to people who you respect. Go mm-hmm. to people who are in NAPFA with you or,
mm-hmm.
are, you know, people that, you know, if you really had to send a client to somebody else, somebody that you could in good conscience refer them to, and see what they're saying on their websites.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever you write, just make sure it's different than those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at their process, make sure that whatever you've illustrated, whatever you've written down is different from what they've written down.
Mm-hmm. Now, not to play devil's advocate here, but maybe just to clarify, do you do that work for clients? I mean, so if somebody hires you, are you the person who does that digging and the looking, or do you assign that to the advisor?
Well, it depends on what kind of relationship
okay.
we have. If we have a coaching relationship,
mm-hmm.
then we give them the assignments, we give them the questions to ask their clients, we send them out to do it.
Okay.
You know, we have them map things out, and then we critique it and we give it back to them.
Okay.
And then critically, you know, when we do their positioning statement, which is sort of our updated version of an elevator pitch,
mm-hmm.
or when we do the process graphic, you know, we we sketch it out, and then we say, now go talk to 10 clients about it, see what they say. Or, you know, if we have a consulting relationship, then we will do it for them.
Okay.
You know, we'll go ask the clients, and we'll put the stuff together, and we'll, you know, do all this work and you know, bring back to you a final proposal when the whole thing's done.
Which do you prefer?
I like the consulting because coaching is fun, and I love working with the advisors. But there, you know, there are some things that I may suspect or that I may have, you know, some ideas about. But my job is to get it out of the advisor.
Yes.
And so, you know, I love to run with those ideas. But if I'm a coach, it's not my job to run with the ideas. If they're paying me as a consultant, then it's my job to run with the ideas. So, you know, it's I like doing both. But the consulting, I think, is a little more fun because we have a little bit more breadth. We already know all the steps that have to be done.
Right.
So we can run through all that. And then when we bring it back to the client, it's a whole picture.
You know, and for those of you who have ever wondered the difference between a coach and a consultant, Steve just nailed it perfectly, right? A coach's job is to pull it out of you. A consultant's job is to almost do it for you. And I started out coaching, as you know, and then I really moved and people wanted me to be a consultant. You know, they would say, Matt, you've done this for 600 offices. Why am I going to do the work? Right. And Steve, I know that you've done it for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of advisors. And, you know, and that's the sort of stuff. It's usually a pretty substantial price difference, but it's worth every minute of it. So I love the positioning statement, the refreshed value proposition or elevator statement. But what I'm really interested in is how you present in a tangible way the deliverable, right? So this experience when you're talking about that's part of your marketing thing. And you just said, you know, you create that kind of step-by-step experience. Help us a little bit more with that. That to me is so fascinating. We have a couple of clients at Top Advisor Marketing who we've taken through a similar process. And for those of you who are listening to this and thinking, you know, Matt, why would you have Steve Wershing on a podcast? Like, he's technically your competition. First off, there's more than enough business to go around. Secondly, you might resonate with Steve way better than you resonate with Kirk or I. And also, what we're doing is so flipping important. I don't care who you hire, right? Just get it done. But we did this for, Kirk had done this for an advisor. It totally changed his practice, man. Like, he's got this awesome document. So talk about your process a little bit and talk about maybe tell us a story of a person who you have taken through the process who had that same sort of experience.
Well, so we have what we call a 4D niche process. And so we've separated the process down into the 4Ds that you need to master to develop a unique niche. And they are discover, design, develop, and declare. Discover is define the target market, clarify it, bring it down to what are the unique needs, wants, and desires of those clients. And when I say unique, I don't mean what everybody needs. Everybody needs a portfolio plan. Everybody needs a financial plan. Everybody needs a retirement plan. I'm talking about what are the needs that make them different from other people. So if you're dealing with corporate executives, they need to know how to handle stock options and negotiating complicated employment agreements and, you know, those kinds of things. The rest of us don't care about. If you're an obstetrician, then you have more sensitivity to asset protection than you have, you know, than other kinds of folks who don't get sued as often. And so, you know, what are the unique needs? And then we develop that client persona around those unique needs. So once we've finished with Discover, then we go down to design. So now that we know the unique needs, wants, and desires of the target client, we design the experience that caters specifically to those unique characteristics. And so that includes, you know, what services do you provide? How do you provide them? How do you describe it, which would be your positioning statement? How do you provide it to the clients? That's your process graphic. And we map all that stuff out. Once that's sort of your brand promise. Once we've developed that brand promise, which may or may not be what you're doing right at the moment, then we move to develop, which is what skills, tools, and resources do you need to be able to deliver on that promise? It may be that you have everything you need now. It may be that you need some extra training on some aspect of a service that they have, or you need access to an expert who can do that. You need to get connected to an attorney who specializes in this, or an accountant who specializes in that. Or you may just, you know, for a lot of the advisors that we work with, sometimes it's finding that unique thing, and we can just buy an off-the-shelf tool that will provide that, you know, that will provide a way to document that, to demonstrate that you're doing that. So, for example, you know, one of the things that I tell all advisors is once you've developed that promise, once you've developed what you say you deliver, you need to have some particular deliverable that demonstrates it, that you can point to. So if we come up with something and I say, okay, now when you take a client through this, what do you use? And they say e-money or Money Guide Pro, or, you know, okay, what else? Well, that, no, that's it. Okay, well, that's fine. And those are good tools, but, but they don't set you apart, and they don't prove that you can do this special thing. And sometimes it's as easy as just put an extra sheet in the front where you go through this analysis that you promised.
Oh.
Or just, you know, when you say we help people with these things, just have a separate little insert that you can put in there so you can point to it and say, see, I did it for you. But sometimes it's bringing on a whole new tool. So
give me an example of another tool.
Yeah. So, so one advisor that we worked with, one of the things that we discovered, he hadn't ever articulated it before, but one of the things that we discovered was what he was really good at because of his empathy and because of his other outside experiences. He finds that he works really effectively with couples, helping them work better together as a team on their money. And after we worked with that for a little while, what we taught him how to say in his positioning statement was, I work with couples as a team on their finances so that they can avoid all the arguments they were going to have in a couple of years without our help.
Wow, that's a good statement.
Yeah, and so then the question is, okay, so what kind of deliverable can you give them to show that? Well, what we found was financial DNA. And it's just a questionnaire. It's a little bit like a it's not really a risk assessment, but it's kind of like a money personality kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And so instead of using it with a single client like it's designed to be done, he gives it to each both members of the couple, and they take it. And then he facilitates a meeting where he says, so this is what you look like, and you can understand this, you know, right? And then Mrs. Client, you can see where he's coming from on this. And then Mr. Client, you can see why your wife feels like this. And so they could develop a language that they could use to effectively communicate with each other. Yeah. And so that would be an example. And so we can show, you know, here's the report, and you can see all the things that it measures, and it just gives you sort of a way of demonstrating here's how we do it.
Wow.
And so a prospect who's coming in, you can show it to them. You're not just saying we're really good at this, but you can show them here's the tool we use.
Right.
And so that's an example of
that's so
one
awesome.
Of those deliverables. And so once we finish with the develop stage, then we move up to declare, and that's your marketing plan.
Gotcha.
And so now that we've developed this brand promise, this unique experience that you're going to deliver, how will we communicate that to the world? And that includes, you know, your website, it includes social media, it includes content marketing, it includes what kinds of PR you do. You know, if you're going to get interviewed by the press, what do you want them to interview you on?
Sure.
You know, not the economy, not the stock market, you know, it's about your particular thing. So that's what Declare is all about, is writing out that marketing plan and then helping them roll it out.
Especially with that, the couple-centric thing that you were just referring to, that's like a PR advisors or PR agents' dream, right? Where they can call, you know, CNBC, the Today Show, all of these different places and say, look, I have a specialist who works with, you know, a lot of the, and I love the, you know, the arguments that were going to happen. What a great statement, powerful, impactful, something that is truly unique and different. Okay. If somebody wants, let's get to the down and dirty. If somebody wants to hire you to, let's start with speaking. What is the best way? So by the way, Steve is a great speaker, very energetic, very engaging with the crowd. He does his homework so that he knows exactly who he's speaking to and what they're there for. I really commend him for that. I noticed that the last time I heard him speak. But let's talk about the three topics that you speak about. And then if somebody does want to book you, whether that's for a conference or something along those lines, what do they need to do?
Well, so the three talks that I give most frequently are Stop Asking for Referrals, which is sort of the whole psychology of referrals and why people give them and that kind of thing. The second one is about the client advisory boards. So it's called role reversal, taking your client's advice. Mm-hmm. And we talk about how to put an advisory board together and the whys and the hows and that kind of thing. And then the third one that is most popular at the moment is Striking at Niche, which talks about how to develop that unique experience.
Gotcha.
And like I said, we go through the six kinds of niche you can develop, and we give an example of each one, and we talk about how you can promote them. And that one's popular, I think, partly because we got an hour of PCE credit for it. So
it's
how to relate better to your clients, but it's also a credit bearing course. So it's been really popular with FPA chapters and that kind of thing.
Good.
And if you want, you can just go to our website, theclientdrivenpractice.com, go over to speaking, click on the button, and one of my assistants will be happy to talk with you and look at the schedule and see what we can put together.
And he's got a really cool PDF thingy here. I don't really know if it's a PDF, but it outlines all of these different things. It's got his bio, some very good testimonials on here from some actually very powerful people. I mean, Bob Varies, Marie Swift. I mean, those are Those are real big flipping names within our industry. And so that's really cool. Now, if they want to hire you either as a coach or consultant, let's go ahead and obviously they're going to go to your website. What's the website again?
It's theclientdrivenpractice.com.
Okay, beautiful. All right. Now, how do you make the decision if you're going to be working with somebody? So let's talk to our audience, right, about who your ideal client would be for somebody who would actually hire you specifically.
Yeah, so my target market is successful advisors who get referrals from less than 10% of their clients and the broker dealers and associations that serve them.
Okay.
Those are the folks. So, you know, there it is. So Julie's research has revealed that, you know, an average advisor is actually referred by about 30% of their clients per year. So, but most advisors, if you ask advisors, and this is across several studies, including one that Julie and I did for SEI last year, what they'll tell you is 4% of my clients refer me. And so, you know, the difference between that is niche, right? The difference between that is because your clients are referring you, but what they're saying is not compelling enough to drive their friend to the phone to call you, or actually the way it happens is to drive them to Google to look you up. Right. So, you know, so if you're in that average area, you know, you're being referred 7 times more than you think. Mm-hmm. And can we help you capture all 30%? No, of course not. Right. But can we help you double or triple it? Oh, yeah. Just getting the targeted messaging, you know, and getting you say the right things. And here's the thing. Your clients want you to succeed, like we said before. Mm-hmm. When they recommend you to a friend, they want the friend to call you because they're not recommending it to reward you. Mm-hmm. They're recommending it because they want to help their friend. Right. So they want that connection to happen. So referral marketing is not about getting people to do stuff they're not doing now. Referral marketing is helping your clients do a better job of it.
Sure.
And so you can give them the language. You can give them the right things to say so that they will go to Google and look you up, and then they'll find the same message on your website and, oh, this is perfectly congruent. Yes. How can I talk to this guy?
So think about that. If you could just double to go from 7 to 14%, the amount of referrals that you literally got and they became clients, it doesn't matter what Steve's charging. Because if you're going to be able to double that every single solitary year or just be at 14% every year, could you imagine how wonderful and sustainable that growth pattern would be? I mean, for a lot of you, you're not trying to bring on 100 new clients. You're trying to bring on 10, right? 15. For some of the larger practices, it might be higher. But if you could just double the amount of referrals that you're getting now, man, that's it's really hard to put a price on that. I mean, I know you technically put a price on it, but from an advisor perspective, that's like printing money, brother. That's awesome.
Well, exactly. And of course we put a number on it, right. but just like you're alluding to, the number that we put on it, I mean, any one of those numbers is so far above what we charge that it's easy.
Yeah. I was joking with a client a long time ago. He was providing some resistance and I said, okay, here's the deal. I will. And this was probably 6-7 years ago. He had 0 referrals. So I was winning, right? I said, I will triple the amount of referrals that you get. And he's like, oh, that's not possible. And we did. And, you know, we calculated it out that it cost 10% for my fees for what he generated from that, which also made me really sit back and think to myself, what am I doing? Why am I not just doing this for myself anyway? But that's a totally different story. Okay. So Steve, hey, thank you very much for your thought leadership today. Today was freaking awesome. We are going to get you back on the podcast for everybody who is our dedicated listeners who have subscribed. We're going to get him to come back because I want him to talk about the client advisory boards. Him and I are totally aligned with the importance of those. And I just like today with finding out about your niche, I love hearing how other people look at things because our job at Top Advisor Marketing is to really bring you great ideas for totally free that will help you run your practice even better. So Steve, thanks for being on the show.
Well, and Matt, thank you so much. You know, I didn't say it before. I really respect the work that you and Kirk do. I think you guys do great work, and I love reading your materials, and I love listening to your podcast, and it's just, you know, you guys have been carrying the right message out to folks for a while now. So good job for you guys, too. And thanks so much for having me on. It's just a real thrill to be able to talk with you here.
Thank you. And so for Steve Wershing, right, CFP, president of the Client Driven Practice, author of Stop Asking for Referrals, and co-host of the Becoming Referrable podcast, please make sure you subscribe to that. First off, the relationship between Steve and Julie is just beautiful. They complement each other really well. they really got the co-hosting thing down. Please subscribe to their podcast. Please check out the clientdrivenpractice.com website. Take a look at Steve. He's awesome on social media. Everybody connect with him on social media. He's putting stuff out all the time. He's been interviewed in a bunch of different places, from Advisor TV to Wealth Advisor TV, from Dow Jones. So make sure you Google him and check this guy out. He's a very, very impressive. So for Steve and Kirk Lowe and for everybody at Top Advisor Marketing, if you have not, for some weird reason, subscribed to this podcast, please hit that subscribe now button below. That way, when you hear something like this and you know another advisor, another financial services professional who could use this information, all you do is click that share button. It'll go directly to them and you'll be helping your friends become better advisors. So for that, we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. Click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.